live on DAZN Worldwide.
Saudi Arabia.
Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern. Canelo versus Skull. The King stakes his legacy once more for the undisputed crown. Standing in his way is Warrior Skull, undefeated and poised to decimate the division on a knockout weekend of boxing.
Let's make history.
Get Canelo versus Skull, Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern, live exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.
And hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. So today I actually have one of my good friends, Rashad, with me. We're back here again. We're going to talk about the movie Sinners. The first half of it is going to be non-spoilers, and then once we get into the 30-minute marker, we'll go ahead and do some spoiler talk, because there are some things I feel like that we need to talk about as far as spoiler goes, because there's just so much stuff within this movie itself that you can't just not do a non-spoiler. Hey, how's it going, Josh?
Salutations all.
Salutations.
What's happening?
How are you doing, man?
What's going on, cousin? How you feeling? Cousin Rashad.
Oh, talking to me? Oh, hey. No, I'm good. I'm good, bro. I was like, look, I didn't know who you was talking to, man. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah, I don't mind. I'll be family, too. I don't mind.
Hey.
You are family. You're welcome in, you know? You know, you get to come inside. You can dance with folks. Just don't be biting people, okay?
I'm not going to be biting anyone. Hey, just because I'm white doesn't mean I'm going to bite people. Come on now.
I mean, that is very true.
or drool, hey, you gotta say drooling too now, you know, they had that drooling.
Yeah, they had that drooling thing going on. Yeah.
That was a really good tell too. Like, I liked that aspect.
Never seen that in a vampire movie. That's the one thing that they brought different to the table this time. I've never seen a vampire with a drool that resembled the shit that was in Cameron Diaz's hair in Something About Mary.
Right.
Is that a hair gel?
Yeah, if you wanted to be.
Oh shit!
Wow,
this is the PG show, right?
No, anything goes on this show. Come on now, we
talk about
dildos and everything else on the Son of Law.
Just no spoilers. That's the only thing.
No doubt.
No, we're gonna do first 30 minutes. Like I've said, we're gonna do non spoiler talk, and then the 30-minute marker, we're gonna do spoilers.
Oh, word. It's only because I see in the title. That's why I was thinking it was all non-spoiler. Okay. I got you.
We're going to do half non-spoiler and half spoilers.
Cool beans.
Okay. So the thing that I want to talk about is, like, I love the cinematography whenever you look at Sinners. I really love it. It actually puts me in the mindset of 1930s Mississippi, even though I live in Mississippi. It puts me in that kind of mindset of these two brothers and also making a way for themselves and making a name for themselves from going from Chicago to going into Mississippi. Then you realize, there's more to these brothers than meets the eye. There's actually, they actually ripped off Al Capone. They are actually gangsters coming back from when they had nothing, and now they have something. And it has that Tony Montana Scarface kind of thing where he comes home to his mom. He's like, let me show you how much of a good boy I am. Here's some money for you.
Yeah. Let me show you, mama, what a good boy I've been. $1,000 for you, mama. There you go.
There you go.
That was a pretty good impression.
It was good. That was really good. That was better than mine.
It was very good.
Great hats. Like,
yeah, hey, catch me after a few drinks. I can do a pretty good Tony Montana, man.
All right.
Yeah.
I want to hang out with this guy. Gotta hang out with that guy.
Yeah, Rashad is awesome. But what did you guys think about the cinematography, the wide angle shots used in the film? Also makes us feel like we are with Stack and Smoke in the juke club as well. So I definitely love how it's shot as well, because Ryan Coogler also said that he ended up shooting it in several different angle frames. So each experience is actually different from each from a movie that you actually see.
Right.
I know he said he asked because Nolan just used the IMAX cameras for Oppenheimer. So he was kind of going and consulting him. I think he's also like one of his mentors too.
Right.
I liked, man, there was one shot. There was a shot like, I can't even fully, I think they're on the road at this point. But it was a shot from where it goes from like the widescreen aspect to then like a full screen aspect. I don't know. It's just the way it happens. It's like really, it's really cool, man. Ryan can wield a camera. Like it's that scene when the party's going on and then all the different like histories start, you know, without diving into, you know, but you know what I'm talking about. I thought that was really, really cool because just of how it was able to showcase generations of change and the evolution of music and how music can tell stories and how these stories are told. And I could get used to Ryan actually just putting every movie. I just want him to start off by like kind of giving a background, like story, little narration, and then diving into it. Because when he did that, it just made me harken back to Black Panther and how they kind of told that history.
Right.
And so I was like, oh, look at that. That's really cool. And I love how Mississippi is also like just the town of Clarksdale in itself is also kind of like a character. Kind of like how like Gotham City was a character in Matt Reeves' Batman, you know, just that element. Like it helps elevate and tell the story by immersing you in that town and the environments and swamplands, the fields, the Delta. It was just great. And I love a lot of blues music. So just being able to see some of the artists that I enjoy be a part of this movie was like really, was just really, really cool. And I was surprised to see Rod Wave did a song for it, but it was really good. You know? And I like Rod Wave. You know, I like Rod Wave. I just didn't expect him to be on the soundtrack. So when I saw it, I was like, oh, this is pretty dope. I'm like, all right. You know? And I've never heard anything bad from Rod. So I was like, I like Rod. Some people don't like Rod Wave. That's whatever. I like Rod Wave. So that's my little
thing with that.
Yeah. You know, it's cool people.
So, look, as long as you don't say Kanye, you know, you could like Rod Wave all you want. If you say Kanye, I'm leaving the stream.
That's him right there. He might be a vampire at this point. I'm pretty sure he is. He probably goes around biting people. I have no idea, you know. It's the yay way.
Yeah. This movie was shot beautifully, man. And what I felt watching it was, even though it was shot with IMAX cameras and everything looked really crisp and nice, but it still had kind of like a vinyl feel to it. You know what I mean? Like just the look and just the look and the color palette. It reminded you of like a vinyl record, like you listen to a vinyl blues record. So he captured the spirit of the blues and just the time itself. You know what I mean? So yeah, visually this movie is stunning. Now I saw it in Dolby, and I heard the best way to watch is in IMAX, but I did watch it in Dolby. And I don't know if this was done on purpose, but there were times where it looked dark, like when there was like, for example, the preacher's father, when it would be a close up of him. He's already a dark motherfucker, but it was like he was extra, like he was, that bacon was extra crispy. And I'm like, did he do this on purpose?
He looked like he did get fried inside the sun, because that's exactly how I looked at him too when I was in Adobe picture as well. I'm like, this dude looked like he already been outside in the sun all day.
Yeah, he was air fried, man. I said, I looked at my daughter. I said, wait a minute. I said, is something wrong with the projector, or do they really film this shit like this? Like, it was some parts that were really dark, but it was still cool though, you know. So yeah, visually, this movie was stunning, man. You know, say I have zero complaints about this movie. So if you get the negatives, just pass me. I ain't got nothing negative to say about this movie, man.
Same here.
All. Yeah.
Almost as a resident dark skin, I understand what it's like. You know, that's my summertime look. And then, you know, then the rest of the year, it's like, all right, I'm cool. But in the summer, yes. We roast a little bit more, get a little bit more char on the bone. You know, it's good stuff.
Hey, this was before Wesley Snipes. This is before Wesley Snipes. Back then, we was the blackest brothers on the planet, according to Rick James.
And then Wesley showed up and just changed the game.
Right.
Well, between Wesley and then there's Sidney Poitier. So there's also, you know, there's some sort of precedent. You know, just But to speak to your point though about the Dolby, like that's what I'm going to see it in next. Because I saw it in IMAX today. I'm gonna go see it again because then I was gonna do like, because it was so much to unpack. Mm. I was like, I'm gonna just end up doing two reviews of it. So I'm gonna go see it in Dolby next, and I'm gonna see if I notice that change. Then I'll be like, my brother, we've darkened together.
I'm gonna do the reverse. I'm gonna watch it in IMAX next, but my experience watching it in Dolby, the main thing that really stood out was the sound. So when the music was blasting through the speakers.
Yeah,
there were times I felt like I was in the juke joint with them, man.
Yes,
and I ain't gonna lie, I ain't the biggest blues fan in the world, man. But my feet were tapping, and I was doing them. Mm-hmm.
I find myself doing that in the car myself, man. I'm gonna be honest with you. Like I love blues music. I love Black Saint Moan and all that stuff too. Right. So I was like, this was very enticed for me. I really loved the soundtrack.
What
for
you know about that Black Snake Moan, man? What you know about?
I know a lot about that Black Snake Moan. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
You from Mississippi, man. Yo,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's like me being from Florida and not know about alligators, man. If you're from Mississippi, you gotta know about the blues.
You gotta know your blues. What are you talking about, John?
Yeah.
But man, like this is what else I like about it is like when you first get introduced to Miles Keaton's character, he just shows up to the church, all bloody and shit. His guitar's broke, and he goes up to the church. And it's only been, and then after that, it gives you the story. We start at the end of the movie, and then we wind up coming back to it. We start at the end and finish at the end, basically.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to say. And I like how they set that up, where he goes into the church, and the door closes behind him, and you don't know what's happening, and then it goes into the whole entire thing only a couple of hours later. And they give you a big backstory on everything that's going on.
Right.
And I loved it. I think Miles Keaton is actually a standout in this movie. I was not expecting that deep voice he had coming out of that little body. I was like, whoa, okay.
Well, almost like hearing Mike Tyson talk for the first time, right? Look at Mike Tyson.
I was expecting that, to be honest with you.
Yeah. You know, like you look at Mike Tyson looks like he's like, yeah, man, what's up? And then when he opens his mouth, it's like, yeah, just I put his nose just up into his brain, and then just like knocked him out, and like, so he's like, oh, he makes a little grunt noise, he's like, oh, and I'm like, did that come out of the fuck?
But dude, like for real, man, like I was not expecting that voice to come out of him. So when I heard him start to do the guitar and then him singing, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this kid is a standout. This is gonna be his break and roll. Everybody's gonna want him after this.
He's a real musician, isn't he? Like really I read that he's actually a real musician.
Okay, I didn't know that. I didn't know he was like a real musician. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I know this is his first movie.
That's what I thought. I thought this was actually his first movie. So But I loved his passion and his drive for blues and his father telling him that's the devil's music and stuff like that. And what you're going to summon the dead from this. And also too, even at the very beginning, they talk about that. And then all of a sudden you see Stack and Smoke show up and they hire him as the musician for the jukebox. And you see all these little pieces coming together as they're going through the road. You're like, okay, where are they going to stop at next? Because, okay, they needed a musician. Got him. Then all of a sudden, well, we need a bouncer. So we're going to go on ahead and go to Cornbread for the bouncer.
Cornbread, yeah.
So I love how it feels like a video game in a sense, like GTA, where we're getting introduced to all these characters and we're just picking them up along the road. In a sense,
well, I thought about, you know, it goes to show my age, but I thought about the first Star Wars where it started out with Luke, and then Luke meets Obi-Wan, and then from Obi-Wan they go meet, you know, they go to that criminal city, then they get Han Solo and Chewie, and then from there then they get Princess Leia, you know what I'm saying? So by an hour into the movie, you have the full, you know, heroic cast, and that's kind of where I thought, yeah, so okay, they're just recruiting people, and then now we get to the shit, it's like, now we have a connection with all these characters. So for people that say that, well, you know, at first it was a slow burn. Well, I'm all for character development, you know,
me too.
Especially with a movie like this where, okay, when shit does go down and something happens to one of these characters, you care. Whereas, you know, like say like a Terrifier movie, which I love the Terrifier movies, But when Art the Clown kills somebody, you don't give a shit about that person. You want to see the body count. Here, you don't want to see anybody die because you just, you attach to all of them pretty much.
Exactly. You
know what
I mean? Yeah. Yeah. That's something that I like, though, too, is the slow pacing. And sometimes you get this. I felt more in tune with the two brothers, with their backstory, mm-hmm. to the point where I forgot this was even a vampire movie.
Right.
It's like they rip off Al Capone, they stole their beer, and then they're also going to, they wind up leaving while there's the arguing between the families, and they're mm-hmm. leaving with the back of their, the alcohol in the back of their truck.
Right.
So I'm like, I want to see that story as a prequel, as to see how that gets going. But I forgot this was even a vampire movie from that point. I'm like, then all of a sudden you get into the vampire aspect of it. It's like, okay, this is what we're signed up for. This is the horror movie that we signed up for and why we paid to see this movie. But I like the slow pace, like you said, Rashad. Mm. I like getting there first, giving us the dialogue, giving us the background of these characters, so that way if they get axed off, we can actually care and have that emotional attachment to that character. Because if it just starts off with all action-y and vampire-ish and stuff like that, it's like one-noted, one-layered characters that we don't even care about, and they're just basically Art the Clown in a vampire movie.
And I'm always for a slow burn. I like slow burns. Just depends on how you pace the story. And I didn't at any point in time feel like, dang, this thing is taking forever. Because you're already at that point, like you guys said, you're so invested in the characters that when the vampire element hits, it's like, bam, you know, it's right there.
It's right there with you. You know, you just want to get it on that ball. Make sure you beat it down real good. You know?
So it's like, it works out. And when that scene comes about, you're kind of like, oh, snap. Yeah, that is part of the movie. And I like how that whole scene played out because it was kind of unexpected in a way where you're thinking, you know, you go in, I'm thinking it's just major, probably full on, I guess, the only other way I could frame it, full on race war, I guess, quote unquote. But not really, because it's like, they will turn on their own and care and really not care as long as they just drag more into hell with them. That's all that really matters.
Right.
But it's just kind of accented by, again, that Jim Crow South at that time, which I thought was another nice added element to it. Just kind of that, I mean, because we're so used to the modern day horror films. And I guess like every decade, you're kind of used to being in this, in a particular time period. Usually like it's modern. So if it's something in the 90s, it's usually in the 90s or the 80s, or even now. But taking it back then, it's kind of like, oh, shoot. But then you can play with it a bit more because there's a lot of folklore to it.
Right.
So I feel like that just kind of makes it a bit more entertaining and a stronger story to tell. So,
right. Well, you know what? Yeah. I'm happy you said that because one thing I was nervous about coming into this movie was, because let's be real, right now there's a lot of racial tension that's going on in this country, you know, not to get on the political tip, but there's a lot of racial tension, a lot of division, you know, either you're on this side or you're on this side, you know. So being that this is dealing with the Jim Crow South, that's a damn, I don't want another movie about black trauma. You know what I'm saying? We have enough of those movies where we can go back and watch those. If everyone says, okay, you want to see, okay, watch this and that movie. I said, no, I don't want to see another black trauma movie. So it takes place in the Jim Crow South, but it's like they don't really go there with that. You know what I'm saying? Like they don't really lay it on thick with the racial shit, but you know it's there because they address it, but they address it like in a subtle way where you know it's present, but it's not like in your face, like, you know, let's straight up like, let's kill all the white folks, you know, let's kill all these evil white people, even though that did almost, you know what I mean?
Right.
I get you.
But I'm glad they didn't get too much into that. So I'm like, I don't want to see no more black trauma films, man. I don't need another 12 years of slave in my life, man. I lived that shit once. I don't even want to go back to that film.
I saw it once in theaters and I'm crying and I'm like, this is too emotional for me.
Right.
Yeah, I've watched that one twice. Yeah, it's a hard watch.
Yeah.
I think my perspective on it is more so if you can tell the stories about things that did happen, but you can tell them in a way that it doesn't, like, not glorified.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, like, you're not trying to make it essentially like how Saw is basically, what, like torture porn?
Right.
Basically, right. You know, like, you're actually trying to tell a story that may have taken place during said time, and these things did happen, but it doesn't always have to be, like, a negative outcome, I guess. I don't know if I framed that right, you know, people on the internet. But I guess, but you get what I'm trying to say.
Like, right, I get what you're trying to say.
You get what I'm saying, yeah.
Right, you have a movie that takes place in a certain time period, and they don't really go there in the way that they normally go there for that particular time setting. Right. And you're right. They don't really go there in the way, that way, but you know that there's this one white person that they get they give the money to, and they're like, "Well, what about the KKK?" Like, "Oh man, there's no such thing as KKK."
Yeah, he was suspect from the jump. I was like, we all know. Come on, don't be stupid.
You know what though? I'm glad that they only mentioned it maybe twice. And then they don't play around with it anymore until, like, the finale of it. So they let you go on ahead. The person sells the property over to the brothers. And that's the end of him. You don't see him until, like, later on. So it's all primarily just focused on the brothers and this business with the jukebox. And then you also have the vampire that just comes in. I like, now, this is what I liked about it. I like how all of a sudden he just comes crashing down. And he's all burnt up and shit. I love how he just automatically just comes in there.
Right.
And he knocks on these people's doors. And this is the part that I'm talking about, that they played around with it maybe twice in the whole entire movie. And then after that, we move on. Because remember, I think it was the brother and sister, or was it the husband, or were they husband and wife? I can't remember.
They were husband and wife, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a creepy ass scene, too. That scene, the way that was shot, yeah. Like with the glowing red eyes and everything like that. That shit was kind of creepy. Yeah, the horror stuff surprisingly really, like, I didn't think, because being that Ryan Coogler's never directed a horror movie, I didn't think the horror was going to work like that. And surprisingly, it did. I'm like, holy shit, for a first-time horror movie, he actually did pretty good with the horror here, I think.
I think so, too.
I just feel like it wasn't a thing of him trying to do a bunch of jump scares. It was just, I'm gonna create invoke some kind of fear here because of the situation. And I think the best kind of horror that you can get, to quote John Campia, oh boy, and John knows, there's a long history. Yeah, but anyways, yes. But to quote him, like, the best kind of horror that there is one that is, it's rooted in tension. The unexpected, like the waiting, the anticipation of what's going to happen. That's where the real fear sets in. It's like when you go, and you know, you did something to school, and the teacher's calling your parents, and you're just waiting. Like, what do they say? What's going to go down? Like, it's just all these things, the anxiety that builds up within you, and that's what's conjured up in this with the vampires. It's like, so when is this gonna,
take place? What's
gonna happen? And I feel like he had to talk to Jordan Peele too, because it was kind of that, because he likes to tease, kind of give you a little bit, but he's not gonna give you all of it at once, and he'll give you a little bit. Then all of a sudden, he just comes up with another uppercut. Boom. He hits you right again. Fuck, knock the guy out.
Just push his nose into his brain. He's making a little girl noise. He's like, ow, ow.
Mike actually said that shit for real.
We love you, Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
By the way, Mike, I'm not the one making fun of you. You can go on ahead and visit those other two friends over here.
Oh, shoot, man. Mike got too much money to be looking at. You know what I'm saying?
You know. And if he tries to fight us, I'm just tell him. We cousins.
Yeah,
that. I'm happy that you're a cousin. Now I'm gonna get that.
I heard that. I heard I'm coming out the ass too, white boy. Then you're in the Delta.
I live in Jackson.
Oh man.
But no, but for real, guys, like, the other thing I really want to touch on is the fact that, you know, you also have the backstory with his girlfriend too. You also have Stack, and you also have Smoke, as well. Mm-hmm. And they both have girlfriends and stuff that they left behind. Mm-hmm. And right. Mary was one of the ones that got left behind. And he was just mm-hmm. doing that just to protect her. Mm-hmm. In my mind, okay, I didn't know that they were receiving her as like a black woman, because that's what I've mm-hmm. heard from other reviewers, that she was being reviewed as a black woman, not as a white woman or right. anything. But in my mind, I was thinking, okay, well, they have a relationship. It's a racial relationship. Back in those days, people don't play with like that or anything. So I'm thinking mm-hmm. that he was just trying to protect this girl that he loves from those racist people that don't allow mixes or anything like mm-hmm. that. So that's how I viewed it as.
Right.
Not that 1% of back in those days, if you're 1% black, you're black.
Well, she did say that her grandfather,
somebody in her line
is mixed, but also in real mm-hmm. life, somebody in her line is
right.
mixed. I'm pretty recent. I, right. like, I think it's a grandparent or something. But then right. there's also the aspect where the mom raised both of them. Kind of yeah, that's why I have to watch it again, because I wanted to like try to get some of those missing pieces, or like that, you know, because you kind of get swept up in everything else, but just kind of some of those smaller aspects. But I'm pretty sure there was something about them being breastfed.
Yeah, the mother raised them, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. And well, in those days, now if your father or your mother was black, then even so, if you had a white mother and a black father, you were black. You know what I'm saying? Even if you reverse it. So if one of your parents was black, even though you're half white, you're still considered black. But if it's like a grandfather or something like that, then you're still, in their eyes, predominantly white, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? But especially if you're lighter. And what people used to do back then, because my father grew up, you know, in the Jim Crow South, and what they used to do back then, if they were like really, like, because there was some black people that were light as you, John, like that, you know, like had passing, blue eyes. Yeah. And, you know what I'm saying? They could pass for white. They could pass white, and they claimed white. You know what I'm saying? They went through their lives disowning right. their black side just so they could fit in with white. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And wouldn't even acknowledge their black side.
And I like how, well, yeah, I totally get that. And then you also have, of course, the vampires that comes into where the Juke is. Like, well, why is she in there? His family.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. I remember listening to the soundtrack, right? So this is before I even watched the movie or anything. I'm like, what is this Irish music doing in this blues kind of thing? I'm like, this kind of threw me off. Once I got the context of it, I'm like, okay, this actually makes sense for it to be in here. Now, I like the fact that they're using the Irish folklore vampire kind of thing mixed in with this and giving us two different types of what's the word I'm thinking of, Josh? Because I know you know me.
What are you talking about? Two different types of culture.
Yeah, culture. There you go. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, there was a few different cultures in here, bro. Like
several different cultures.
It wasn't just the black culture. Like, you know, you had Asian culture, Chinese culture, the Native mm-hmm. American, you know what I'm saying? Irish, mm-hmm. black, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? It just covered mm-hmm. almost the whole spectrum.
Okay, you just covered something I wanted to talk about, too, was the Native mm-hmm. American thing. And mm-hmm. also...
I love that scene so much.
Yeah.
At first, I'm like, it bothered me that they weren't in it after that scene. But right. then I'm like, why would we have them in there? Because remember, someone that's white is not going to know the folklore behind vampires. So therefore, the Indians have to break it down to someone that's white because they don't understand their own culture. So that's understandable. But you have someone of color that's able to do that because of the fact that she grew up with voodoo and stuff like that. So she's able to understand what vampires are. So I think, you know, we can actually have the Native Americans be introduced for a few minutes. And then now it goes into the main characters. And this one character is seeing it all, knows it all, the mythology of everything. So therefore, you don't need to have the Native Americans in there. But in my notes, when I was taking in the movie theaters, I'm like, why is no Native Americans in here? Then I started thinking about it. I'm like, okay, it makes sense. Because I've been subliminally, I was actually being called out on my own notes. Because I'm like, why am I not seeing anybody building stuff inside the jukebox? Then we get to the very end. I'm like, okay. I now understand.
Yeah.
So.
Facts. And hell, they might show up in the sequel, man. Who knows? I'm like, if they decide to do another one, I think, you know, if they expand the lore, they can, you know, go into those, the Native American group and, mm-hmm. you know, because like they were like vampire hunters, right? Or something like that.
Yeah, vampire hunters.
Because, mm-hmm. you know, like, I know there's different names for different creatures in every mythos that there is. I know Annie. That's right. That's right. I was just going to keep saying One Me because I know that's the actress's name. Aureola. There we go. Mm-hmm. One Me Aureola. But yes, Annie. I don't know. She kept calling them like Haynes.
Oh yeah, Hates? There was a name. There was a name she kept calling them.
Yeah, it was. I think it was like we'll go with Hates. I think it was Hates. Okay. Something along that. And then when she figured it out, it's like, oh no, this is something much, much worse. And I liked how the native, and when the review I just did, I was saying that I felt as though it was the more spiritual aspect of it all. I'm trying to word this where it's not like, you gotta be careful how people say things, but essentially,
spit it out, shit.
The culture, yeah, he's not right. Run. You know what?
Spit that shit out, man.
Right.
That's why I love this guy. I love this guy. I'm partying with that guy. Okay. But you know how, like, in some cultures, essentially, there's, like, a more prime spiritual basis that goes in with it, right? There's a lot more, not just with the mythos, but it's just the culture beliefs, the soul, the spirits, and all that, and understanding that there are good spirits and that there are bad spirits.
Live on DAZN Worldwide.
Saudi Arabia.
Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern. Canelo versus Skull. The King stakes his legacy once more for the undisputed crown. Standing in his way is Warrior Skull, undefeated and poised to decimate the division on a knockout weekend of boxing.
Let's make history.
Get Canelo versus Skull, Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern, live exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
And the thing with Remick and the vampires, we don't really, there's no culture behind them because it's just, they are just the antagonists, the monsters that we're going against. And the protagonists that we're dealing with is like, these are the things that they know or they come to learn and see. And the significance of those, I believe the Native Americans, they're kind of like the whispering warnings in the distance, essentially. Like they already know and then they disappear. So it's like they clue us in on what's going on as the audience, and then they try to warn the lady, but the lady's so stuck in, she doesn't like the natives, so she doesn't want to listen. Come to find out that at her own detriment, the cause of her not listening, because she already let the devil in, now it's a matter of, well, now you're just going to join my army, and your soul is stuck in this body, but you will never have control ever again for me. So it's that whole, it's just, it. That's why, again, I have to watch it again because it's so many
deep
layers.
It's so layered, yeah.
And it's beautiful. It's got so many onion layers. It's really good in that way, you know. But no, that was one of my favorite scenes. Just for that aspect. I don't know what tribe they were, and it's funny because I was actually trying to read almost some different tribes for this other script that I'm doing. I was just like, huh, it's crazy how we're in Mississippi and the Delta, and you know, just I love that. Definitely a lot of tribes then in the time period. I was actually surprised that it was, maybe not surprised. I think it's because I was watching another movie last night that was in 1906.
Yeah.
And then like this was in 1932. So I'm just like, that. This is a lot of, just all right in here in the span of 2 days, you know? So anyways, yeah, take the mic from me, please.
Nah, you're good. But, you know, I also liked how we have, as, you know, we have Miles playing the guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite song on that album is I Lied. And I like how we have the different future of music going, playing through this whole entire thing. I love the beat to it. I like how they're going into different generations of music, different cultures of music. With this, the person that composed it did a very good job of composing it. I know that Brian Coogler worked with him before in other movies.
Ludwig, what's his name? Yep. Ludwig
Göransson.
Yeah. Because they went to film school together. Yep.
That's awesome. Really?
Yeah, they went to film school together, yeah. Graduated together.
That's awesome.
That, so, hey, that's day one.
I respect it.
Yeah.
I respect it.
But, yeah, I wanted to go into the little bit of the vampire stuff, too, now, as well, if you want to go there. Where do you guys want to go as far as the...
Okay, well I'm going to ask you, because I've saw quite a few reviews and even talked to some of my peers, and some, not all of them, but some of them were saying that the vampire stuff was the weakest part of the movie. They said that if you took the vampire stuff out, the movie would have been just as strong, if not stronger, because they'd be like, yeah, the first like 40 minutes was great, and then when the vampire stuff came in, like the movie, that's when the movie kind of became unhinged a little bit, you know, say where it kind of lost its focus.
I don't know. I feel like that's what I've signed up for. I signed up for a vampire movie, and that's what I got.
Right.
And unhinged.
I don't mean
to cut you off, Joe. It's annoying because their jaw is literally unhinged.
Exactly, man. That's what fucking vampires do. They're unhinged.
Exactly.
And you know what? The woman that pissed me off was the Asian woman that pissed me off. I would have.
She had what was coming to bro, bro,
yeah.
Bro,
yeah.
Bro.
I like it. I get it. I'm a parent, so if my daughter was being threatened, I think I would be thinking the same thing. But just as an audience watching, knowing that if you invite a van, if you invite them in, it's like mm-hmm. sheep to the slaughter. You're all fucking dead. Dead.
Exactly.
You know, as De Niro would say, dead.
Oh my God. Like Christopher from The Sopranos.
Oh, yeah. I didn't. I said,
but
you know what? Yeah. Hey, that was a kick-ass scene though, man. Because when she stabbed the vampire, right, and she set herself on fire. I thought that shot was kind of cool.
That was literally flames.
For her daughter. Yeah, went up in flames. Exactly. Scarface.
But no, you asked me if I thought the vampire stuff worked. Yeah. For me, it worked.
Okay.
Everything about the vampires to me was creepy. It was making me wondering how they're going to get in, because they can't get invited in, or they can't get in unless they're invited in. Who's going to be the first one to invite them in? How is this going to play out? And then you find out that Mary was the first one to go out there. And there is like, look, you guys have never been accepted by society. We'll accept you in. We'll love you for who you are. We'll be family. I'm like, this sounds like a cult, but still.
But hold up. But yo, before you continue, so, all right. So with the thing with the devil, all right, I was always taught the devil never comes at you like as a horned evil individual with the fangs.
Nope.
The devil comes at you in things that you like, that mm-hmm. you desire, you know what I'm saying? So being right. that they're from this time, like, so he's basically saying, look, man, you know, look at this.
Right.
You're hated by this group of people. You know, you're never going to have shit. You ain't going to be shit with us. You get to live forever. You get to have mm-hmm. anything you want, man. You can never die. Mm-hmm. You'll be accepted.
Right.
That's tempting. You know what I mean? So right. I like how it's not just pure evil. It's like, you know, it's evil with the purpose almost. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Right. There's definitely like the thematic elements of that.
Right.
Because when you allow yourself to be enticed by something, you can be blinded to the temptation, not realizing that you're going to fall into your own demise. And that's exactly what ended up happening. It's like, and that's why I really like the title so much, because there are all kinds of sins, and you had all these people in this one room. Right. And it's just, but basically, they're just raising hell. So at that point, you're just inviting this evil to enter in, because it's watching from the distance. And once it has that invitation, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And that just goes to show Ryan Coogler knows vampires, because that's mm-hmm. vampire 101. Vampires are seductive. They're they're not like werewolves and other type of monsters. They're very seductive. You know, if you mm-hmm. look at a vampire too long, you'd be like, go ahead, get it. Go ahead, get it.
But yeah, you're right though, man. Like from watching from the distance, when we have that one scene with Miles and he's doing the song, you see the whole entire building on fire, and they're watching from a distance and envisioning what it's going to be like to basically burn this place down
mm-hmm.
and to be to actually bring these people into their world.
Right.
So I like how that perspective is. I definitely think you hit the head on the nail for that one.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a double Tundra, really. It was a barn burner, but it was also kind of like a prelude to hell, honestly.
Exactly.
You know, because yeah. I just thought about, you know, I automatically thought to the scripture about the broad gate and the narrow gate, and just how you have all these people that may be going one way, and it's just a straight road to hell. But then mm-hmm. if you take the narrow gate, then that leads to eternal life, right? But right. you got all of this in this room, and just nothing but flames coming down everywhere. And what is lurking? Again, as we just said, it's mm-hmm. that devil. And all you got to do is just invite it in just a little bit. Yep. All you need is just a little crack in the door. The rest That's is history. It. But, yep. you know, you got to really, you want to get rid of it, and you really got to fight it. And you got to fight with all you got. I don't care how much. You better find 75 pounds of garlic just off rip, you know, conjure that out of midair. The wooden pikes and stakes and all that. It was that was the other aspect that I liked, that they just went back to straight classic vampire killing strategies. Because again, just think about the time period. It would kind of, to me, it would make sense very much. So I think it's cool that we got this and Nosferatu the same year. Yeah, we're not talking about that, but still, just kind of that whole aspect. You know, and I like the movie. You know, it's I just thought that was really, really neat, because you know how some people, they try to switch up, like, oh, how are we going to kill the vampires? You know, Twilight, cut the head off, burn the body, like, you know, just a little wooden
Wesley Snipes it, you know, with the silver and stuff. But you call, I love Blade.
If Blade was in this movie would have been like 30 minutes long, you know. Yeah, very true. Blade would have shut that shit down. No,
you know, go back over there and drink something with the people who's running the jukebox. That's
exactly.
Yeah.
Another thing I want to say too, man, I think the vampires in here was definitely symbolic, and it's kind of funny because I read that that Ryan Coogler, his contract with Warner Brothers, like his non-negotiables as far as making this movie, I don't know if you read that, where he gets full ownership of this movie.
Yeah, he has full control now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this movie, so it's like it parallels with this movie, because this movie is all about ownership. Owning your own shit.
In control.
Know? So in control. So how you say his name? Remick, right?
Remick,
yeah. When this kid started playing the guitar, that's when he really wanted him, you know. So it's like, I want to take you, I want to own you, I want to own your music, your culture. I want that shit, you know, say it. So in exchange, I'll give you eternal life, I'll give you everything you desire, but I want your soul, I want your culture, mm-hmm. and I'm gonna bank off of it. That sounds like the music industry.
Yep.
I'm not just talking about for Black people either. I'm just talking about for musicians, period.
In general,
musicians, period, man. From musicians to filmmakers, man. Even our favorite directors, our Scorsese's, our Spielberg's, you know, say they don't own their shit. It's owned by the studio. So they say that Ryan Coogler's he shook up the whole industry with this shit. You know, so not just the movie, but just
entertainment industry as a whole. Negotiate.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
And you gotta be able to read the fine print.
Right, I thought that was powerful, man. Ownership. I think that's the theme of this movie, man, is ownership.
Because even with like how they got their money, right?
Mm-hmm.
That club, once they purchased it, it was theirs. It was theirs for only a night.
Right.
But it was theirs.
Right.
You know, so they could say that they could set their rules, they could do what they wanted. Even with the conversation that Smoke and Stack were having about the profits and how much money they were supposed to make. You know, mm-hmm. they said like, this is plantation money versus the real profit that we're supposed to have. And it's like, well, if you over here letting these people get these drinks for like 30 cents, even though it was open at night, the price is 50 cents. If you can't afford it, then that's just what it is. You just can't afford it. But then Stack, on the other hand, is kind of like, well, you know, think about this too for business purposes. And I like that back and forth too. for the first opening night, let it be a little bit of a discount, because people will still be coming back. Like if this night hits, they'll be back every week.
So listen, let me ask y'all. So being that we're on, so at the very end, where they go back to the beginning and he walks to the church with the guitar and his dad's trying to take the guitar from him, like, let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And he's holding on to it. He's not releasing it. Because my daughter was asking me, like, what did that scene mean? And I know there could be, like, a lot of different interpretations for that. But to me, I took it as this boy loves his music. Like, that's his heartbeat. That's his mm-hmm. DNA. He loves his music. And his dad being the preacher, the hardcore Christian, that's the devil's music. Let it go. You see what almost happened to you. You almost died. The devil almost took your life. But it's like, yeah, but this is who I am. I can't.
This is who I am.
This is who I am. And then fast forward, he's an old man still doing his thing.
Right. And okay, I want to bring up a point though. Here's the thing: his dad may want to let him go, but here's the thing: if it wasn't for that guitar, he would have been dead.
Facts.
Because the very thing that his dad was saying that was evil, even so evil, because of the fact that it saved his life.
Facts.
So therefore, you know, it's a metaphor of you can use any kind of instrument any way you want. It's how you do it and what you do with it. Because we're all given a choice and free will.
Well, look at
I agree.
Boy, John, you know, took us to church. Boy, you know, took us to church, boy. Man, that Mississippi coming out of you.
There you go.
Bishop De Gregorio. Yeah.
That's what I got church, out of it, got me my church shit. Woo! Yes. Preach it.
Yo, he's
sanctified.
But you know, I was thinking, it's funny because I was thinking the same thing I was telling my parents downstairs about. I said, yeah, y'all got to see this. And I said, man, you know, sometimes, because I was thinking about that one scene when he just couldn't let it go. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes, again, it goes back to that whole blinding aspect where you wonder if you're using it for the right reasons, right? But sometimes you can take that very same thing that, again, was, as John said, used for indirectly evil purposes. Like, you were contributing, and then you weren't, like, intending to. You're kind of an accessory to it. And you can flip it to save yourself and make a better life, you know, but doing it the right way and not the wrong way, which is what he ended up doing. I mean, he ended up having a very successful career, some 60-something years later, the 1992 when we come back up with it? Yeah. And I thought that last scene probably nearly evoked a tear from me. I'm not going to lie. Right. It almost got me in the mid credits when they were talking about it. And how, you know, there was how he's stuck and he can't, it's not something he can shake. Mm-hmm. And that was the last time that he saw his brother. And it just kind of reminds me how when people talk of, I mean, you were friends and you just talk about immortality and like, what would that be like, you know, like on Earth, you know?
Right.
And it's just, can you imagine just all the people that just, that you knew and you loved, they just keep on passing on, passing on, and you're just here. That in itself has to be some kind of torture that, you know, you can't escape. You think that you're, and I felt like it was a very honest description of what he was dealing with.
Because he's basically the only living relative that he has, you know?
Yeah.
And then what else I like about this is, like, his brother, like, Smoke's brother, Stack, you know, I forgot which brother turned vampire, but...
Stack.
Yeah. But I like how there was still some good in him to the point where he's like, I will leave our cousin alone because I made that promise to him. No matter how my instincts will take over me, I still have some kind of free will over me, so therefore I'm not going to go ahead and suck the blood out of my cousin, turn him into a vampire. I'll make that deal with you because we're family.
Which kind of goes against vampire lore, classic vampire lore, but because it's sinners, I'll give it a pass. You know, even the whole inviting the vampire in thing, if you watch anything from Lost Boys to Fright Night, you know that only the head of the household, whoever owns the place, can invite them in. Nobody else counts.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you watch Lost Boys when Max wanted to come in. He was like, well, Michael, you're the man of the house, so, you know, I won't come in unless you invite me. He says, you're invited. So the fact that the Chinese lady was able to let him in, I'm like, okay, I'm going to give it a pass. Rules are made to be broken. The fact that Stack was able to keep some of his humanity, nah. When you're a vampire, you're a vampire. You're dead. That's
what I liked about the fact that it was different in that kind of sense of it's a different type of way of telling a story. And I'm like, I can give it a pass because I'm a huge vampire fan. I love the lore. Right. But I'm like, I can give this a pass because of who his brother is and because of the family dynamic of it. Because
shit, even when you watch From Dusk Till Dawn when Tarantino bit. Yeah. He didn't give a fuck if that was his brother. He was food.
No. You're right.
Yeah.
Well, but, then there's the whole Twilight aspect where you got to pin these people down and try to feed them animals for the longest time.
We're not mentioning Twilight at all.
I just want to throw this out there. Exactly. I'm telling you, one of the funniest movies of all time is that first Twilight. It is a comedy unintentionally. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying. I prefer Vampire Diaries, but Twilight in itself.
Separation H.
You see the shirt I got on, right? Vampire coming if they want.
Oh shoot! Okay, but you know, hey, speaking of, since you mentioned that, there was a Rattler in the movie.
Oh. Yep.
That scene where he tossed him the knife, that was slick.
That's right. That was a cool scene. Actually, mm-hmm. I jumped at that part where he opened the snake jumped out. I said, "Oh, okay." Yeah. You got me. Yeah. I jumped a couple of times in this movie.
I think I jumped. I think it was when if I did jump at any point, it was when it's probably when Stack turned. It was probably when he busted through the door because it got real real quiet for a split second, and then bam, he just landed on top of it.
I thought you was gonna say. I thought you was gonna say the same thing I was gonna say when Cornbread was asking for the money. When he said, "Hey, I'll work," you should.
Yes, I did. Yes, yeah, that's right.
I was thinking to myself, dude, you know better than to stick your hand out there and put. Throw that money. Like
that's what I thought he was gonna do. I thought he was gonna throw the money here, take it, bye. Right. That's what I would have done.
Right, and I thought he got bit because it happened so fast. I told my daughter, I said, "Wait a minute, did he bite him?" I thought he got bit. And then when he see him again, he had no marks on his arm. I said, "Wait, I thought he got bit." And my daughter, she said, "No, he snatched away just in time before he could bite him." But it happened so fast, I didn't catch it.
Right,
and see, I thought he was gonna it was very very close because he was on the ground for a minute and they had to pull him back in.
Right,
just before Cornbread was able to get another bite. But speaking. We talk about how messed up, how some of the the gore in this was, because when people were describing it, they were saying, "Oh, this is really gory and really raunchy," and all. I'm like, "Well, there was elements of horniness for sure, but I didn't think it was that gory. It was with the blast and how their flesh looked after getting shot in the face when the guy got his face cut by the knife when they were getting bit and all." I was like, all right. Well, when Sam got slashed, but that wasn't. They made it seem like when they said it that people were getting their arms and limbs ripped off, and I was kind of expecting. I don't know.
The carnage candy was not. It's tame compared to From Dusk Till Dawn. You know what I'm saying? From Dusk Till Dawn had that over the top carnage candy. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Mm. This one here was kind of tame, even though it was there, but it wasn't like that. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like
I didn't find that gory. Everybody's saying, well, I'm just going to use Texas Chainsaw Massacre as an example. The original 1975 OG one. There was this movie is so gory, da 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 da. But if you look at the movie, it's not gory at all.
No.
It's our own subconscious that's actually making us think that something is gory when it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just amplifying it because of what we're seeing.
Right.
So I'm thinking that's why people are saying, oh, this is more grotesque and also gory and stuff like that. I think it's just their subconsciousness amplifying it to a 10.
It's what you don't see. It's the Jaws effect. The same thing with Jaws. You know, Jaws wasn't really a gory movie, but it's what you don't see. You know, because they barely show the shark in the movie, but you just imagine the shark and it's like it fucks with you. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. I really have to say, I mean, this is actually my favorite movie of the year so far.
Mm-hmm.
Hands down, Ryan Coogler knocked it out of the park. Don't get me wrong, I love Creed, I love Black Panther, but this is his own original work without any IP attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
This is my favorite movie, and also too my favorite soundtrack right now that I'm listening to on repeat. And I mean, at 21 songs, you get, and I have an hour drive to work. I'm listening to this all the way to work.
Facts, dog. So, if you asked me a week ago, I said Warfare was my favorite movie of the year. Yeah, Warfare just got bumped to number 2. You know, it's still close to. I still love Warfare, but this definitely takes. This is the movie to beat this year so far.
Yeah, I still gotta watch Warfare. up until this point, my favorite was actually Mickey 17.
Which I watched it.
I enjoyed that thoroughly. I said in the review, I said, you know, this was for the year of like dual roles. And I just need to figure out how do they do this? Because I know at one point, I think somebody had said, I can't remember which director it was. Like, some years back, I was listening to how they do this. And I know there was something about a mirror effect. But then I'm like, nah, it's got to be much deeper than that. Because like, there's got to be another technological layer.
And how back in the day, they used to use split screen. Screen back in the day. And then when it would be a shot where, like, say they're fighting each other or something like that, then they would show the back. Yeah, they would show the back of another actor to make it look like them. But then close up, you would see the split screen. So, for example, you watch a Double Impact with Van Damme. You know, if you watch that now, you could see the green screen. You know what I'm saying? But now it's so seamless. Like when they showed Stack and Smoke passing a cigarette to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Something as small as that, I'm like, it looked like they're really like it's two different.
Right, exactly.
It's crazy.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I remember Fight Club, for example, where you get a flash of light, and that's actually how you know that the character switching from one person to the other, and that's how you know that plot twist is there.
Right.
And now it's to the point where everything is so remastered. And so that looks really clean. So you can't even tell if it's fake or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I love what they did with the brothers. I love this movie to death. But yeah, I definitely recommend anyone to go on ahead, check this movie out for yourselves. Like I said, you can see this. It's the same movie, but it's filmed in several different ways. Check it out wherever you guys can. And yeah, I might have to do another review for this.
I'm sorry, I just had to sneak that in there subliminally. IMAX.
IMAX is the way to go.
Shout out Delroy Lindo, man.
So, with Adobe.
We ain't mentioned Delroy this whole time. Shout out Delroy.
The OG, Delroy Lindo, man. Criminally underrated actor. Jesus.
Golly.
Killed it.
All right, that scene hurt me. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Y'all know what I'm talking about. That joint hurt.
Sorry, man. Let it out, man. Let it out.
It's okay, man. We're here.
Sorry.
We're in a circle of trust.
It's okay. It's okay for a man to cry.
Yep.
No cry I'm a G, cry. Bro. You know? God damn it.
Hey, pour a little liquor for him, man.
I'm telling you, man. Nah, that's the way that ain't here. When he said, I'm not drunk. Now shut up, woman, and watch your mouth. I said, I ain't mad at you, man. Because when that whole because I know we're about to wrap up here, it's funny because I thought instantly back to how everyone was mad at Star-Lord, and so now she's going to be the new Star-Lord. She's going to be the new Star-Lord.
Sure.
All you had to do was just like not say "come on in," which is, and again, both of them, I understood their reactions. It's very human reactions, but we got to read the situation and be situationally aware. Cannot say that.
Look, she's already a meme. She's already, I posted on my Facebook. There's a meme. Yeah,
it says, "Oh, word."
Yeah, somebody else also posted this. If I send this to you, that means I'm about to fuck shit up.
I'm about to fuck it up for everybody. Facts. She did indeed.
All those bodies are on her.
But I understand though. Like, she had a daughter to get back to, and she was worried about that. I understand. I totally get it.
Yeah. Listen, I got my babies. I probably would have reacted the same way. Or then again, I don't know. I probably would have been like, man, fuck them kids, man. I'll make some more, you know.
Oh, my God. I'd be like, do not let them in. Don't let them in.
What about your kids? Now I can make some more.
We're good.
You're good. Yeah. My situation still work. I can still reproduce.
He said seeds were made for planting.
Exactly.
But one last thing I want to mention is Cornbread. With his eyes, it looked like his eyes were pitch black. Mm-hmm. The way they looked outside, they didn't look red or anything. It's like there's something off with Cornbread. Mm-hmm. Just by the way because of his eyes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard the whole glowing eye thing came from Puss in Boots, the death character.
Yes.
I was like, wow.
Listen, you have to understand, Rashad. Okay, there's a history here. All right. Mm.
Puss in Boots, The Last Wish is my favorite movie of 2022. I careth not what anyone says. I know everything everywhere all at once one. And yes, that is up there. But it's Puss in Boots, The Last Wish. And I went on every single channel that asked me to join them for a review, a questionnaire, a competition, whatever. I didn't care. It got mentioned. And I made sure the people knew. I spread the gospel of Puss. And I even said this to John. And I let him know. Okay. And even though
Pinocchio this is all I heard during one of my reviews was Puss in Boots.
It's Puss in Boots, The Last Wish. And when he said he was inspired by death, people, when he said he was inspired by death,
this is the first time he's facing us.
Okay. Okay.
There's something in my heart. Ryan Coogler, he knows ball. He knows game. Coogler, if you ever see this,
Statham, holy shit.
Yeah.
Exactly. Thank you, Mike. I need to watch this review. We appreciate you.
Thank you, Jason. I do appreciate it. I know you're a working man. So,
a beekeeping working man that transports crank.
Beekeeping working.
Quit taking our jobs, Jason. Just quit taking our jobs.
Oh shit, that's great, man. I love that.
Gotta put that on a t-shirt somewhere.
Oh man, dude, put that on a shirt. I'll buy that motherfucker, man.
Right, I'm telling you, know what? I'm writing that down.
Well, guys, that's gonna be it as far as this review goes. Jason Statham over here froze solid. So I just want to tell everyone, have a great and safe night. Rashad, thank you so much for joining me for this review. Midnight Cinema, Josh, thank you as well.
Absolutely.
I appreciate you, dude. Seriously.
I'm glad you invited me, my friend. I'm glad I got to see it today, too, because I was really in a debate because I was like, either I'm seeing it today or I'm seeing it tomorrow, because there was another movie I wanted to see today, but then it wasn't going to be playing tomorrow. And I was like, you know what? We're doing this review tonight. I will just find The Ballad of Wallace Island at somewhere on stream.
There you go. Guys, so, do me a favor. Rossi has her Last of Us after show coming on now. So go ahead, check out the after show for The Last of Us Season 2, Episode 2. She's doing the review with Don and Jason. Go on over there. Give them some love from me. And always until next time, guys, have a great and safe night. And we'll catch you guys on the next one. Bye, guys. Peace.
Live on DAZN Worldwide.
Saudi Arabia.
Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern. Canelo versus Skull. The King stakes his legacy once more for the undisputed crown. Standing in his way is Warrior Skull, undefeated and poised to decimate the division on a knockout weekend of boxing.
Let's make history.
Get Canelo versus Skull, Saturday, May 3rd, 7 p.m. Eastern. Live exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.